After less than 2 years of fruitless occupation, the British returned Manila to Spain in a turnover ceremony with big buying your first car energy. There was the Spanish military leader marching into the city on a white horse. There was a gun salute. There was the tolling of the Santa Cruz church bells and the flag ceremony. All that was missing was a giant key and a photo op. To cap off Manila's big comeback into the Castilian fold, the Spanish hosted their conquerors in a farewell banquet. Tally-ho, toodaloo, and all that. But when the British ships finally left, the Spaniards were less gallant to those they viewed as turncoats and collaborators. Now returned to their seat of power, the Spanish turned their wrath on the Chinese. They called them traitors. They called them murderers. They called them apostates. As soldiers surrounded the predominantly Chinese districts of Arroceros, Binondo, Santa Cruz, and Apayan, Spanish official after Spanish official accused the Chinese in the Philippines of taking the side of the invaders during the British occupation. Their testimonies reached the ear of the king, who now had to decide, was it time for all Chinese to pack up and leave the Philippines? Welcome to the Colonial Department. This is the podcast where we take long-lost stories from Philippine colonial history and bring them to life. In this episode, we answer the question, did the Chinese really take the side of the British during the 1762 invasion? This is Season 5, Episode 13, Union Jack and Union Jade. Even before the Europeans sailed in from the east, junks from the Middle Kingdom traded wares with the sultans and datus. It was this Chinese trade that made Manila so attractive to the conquistadors in the first place. As the Spanish took over the Philippines, the Chinese, or Sangles as the Spaniards called them, became enmeshed in our economy, our culture, our food, and yes, into our very DNA. But this interconnection was ever-shifting and at times even turned downright dangerous as thousands of Chinese immigrants made their home in a land that would sometimes be reluctant to embrace them. As one scholar put it,
the Spanish dilemma was quickly apparent. Unable to live without the Chinese, they were equally unable to live with them.
The first wide-scale persecution and massacre of Chinese in these islands happened in 1603. Not even 40 years after Legazpi had settled Manila. Increasing persecution and surveillance had shoveled fuel into a burning furnace of Chinese resentment. Despite everything they brought to the fledgling new colony, their trade, their crafts, their labor, they were corralled into separate neighborhoods and viewed with suspicion. So thousands of Sangles took up spears and arquebuses, then marched against the capital. Not everyone rebelled in 1603. Certainly, those with coin and the Christian names and the Spanish connections would have had second thoughts about joining any insurrection. But when the rebellion was put down, Spain brought down its wrath and its revenge on the remaining Chinese. There was no nuance when it came to the sword, and thousands were killed in the massacre that followed. Despite the killings and the segregation, the Chinese community in Manila flourished. Through loans and labor, taxes and trade, marriage and middlemen, commerce and contractors, they remained an integral cog in the colony's chugging engines. Plus, Chinese men freely mixed with and married Indian women, until their families became so numerous that by 1741, mestizos got their own special classification in the tax register. Even so, xenophobia always hovered threateningly above Binondo and the other Chinese districts. Wrote one historian,
in order to balance economic necessity and colonial security, the Spanish conceived of an ideal number of Chinese.
They believed that if there were too few Chinese in the Philippines, the economy wouldn't run. Too many, however, and they would revolt. Look at the uprisings of the 17th century, thought the Spaniards, conveniently ignoring how their own oppressive policies could have led to the revolts. This same historian writes,
attaining a magic number of Chinese was an elusive goal.
Of course it was. This magic number was totally arbitrary, going up and down in the wake of rebellions and conflicts and massacres and orders from on high to expel all Chinese from the Philippines. But in the end, it wasn't China that turned out to be the biggest threat to the conquistadors. 1762. From Manila Bay came the flash of the Union Jack, the boom of cannons, and then the stomp of soldiers on the move, the air thick with dust and gunpowder as artillery punched a breach through the walls of Intramuros. These walls had stood for almost 200 years, but they were no match against the concentrated force of the invading British fleet. The army that stormed the capital in 1762 may have been British in name, but its soldiers and crew were drawn from assorted corners of the empire. From India, sepoys held the front lines, while Lascars did the battlefield grunt work of manning the supply trains and burying the dead. Christianized Asians called Topazes formed one company, while Kafirs from Africa formed another. Around 300 troops were French prisoners of war, reluctantly pressed into military service. And then, when Manila fell and Spanish power melted away, some Sangles too joined ranks with the new occupiers. The Chinese had been living in Spanish-controlled Philippines since the earliest days of the colony. Wouldn't trading one European colonizer for another just be another case of new boss same as the old boss? But perhaps after two centuries, they'd had enough of the bad rap and the bad treatment. Perhaps anyone would be better than pious, pompous Spain. Perhaps this new boss would even be a better breed of colonizer. We'll be right back. Like the Spanish before them, the Brits soon found out how much they needed to rely on the Chinese community, not just for food or for supplies, but also for navigators and guides, for spies and sentinels and soldiers. It was Chinese trackers who led them down to secret paths and around indefensible sites. It was Chinese guards who stood watch over their stockades and fortifications. It was Chinese workers who climbed up church towers all over the city and took down their bells so that the Spanish wouldn't be able to melt them down into ammunition. And there were Chinese too who took advantage of the chaos of war to rob towns and churches, or make off with silver, or torture the Spanish. When the war ended in 1764 and the Castilians regained control of the Philippines, historian Salvador Escoto writes that the Spanish accused the Sangles of two principal crimes.
Infidencia, which means treason or disloyalty, the renunciation of their allegiance to the king by siding with the enemy, and apostasia, which means apostasy, the abjuration of their Catholic faith by perpetrating sacrilegious acts and violence against priests in sacred places.
Witnesses took to the stand to testify against the turncoat Chinese. The friar seemed particularly betrayed by how quickly the Sangles shook off the Catholic faith when the Protestants took power. One of them lamented that under British rule, they worshipped their idols openly inside the Parian. All testimonies were collected and sent to Madrid, where the Supreme Council of the Indies took 5 months to debate over what to do with the Chinese in the Philippines. When that was done, they turned over their recommendation to Charles III, ruler of Spain. By now, you've heard several stories that absolutely, definitively prove that all the Chinese were complete traitors during the British occupation of 1762 to 1764. But that's not exactly true. Yes, many Chinese and Chinese mestizos took the side of the Brits. For example, witnesses said that around 1,500 to 2,000 of them helped the British assault a Spanish position in Bulacan 1 year into the occupation. But did you know that an equal number of Chinese and Chinese mestizos also fought alongside the Spanish resistance? Their patron was Antonio Tuason, a wealthy merchant from Binondo. Spain never forgot his help and rewarded him richly when the British left. To this day, Tuason's descendants remain part of the Philippine elite. The British also found out that many of their Chinese allies were actually double agents. One high-ranking officer launched a manhunt for a mestizo named Juan de la Cruz, the perfect undercover name in the Philippines. De La Cruz ultimately paid for his spying with his life, even as the British discovered that there were at least 10 other spies working with him. Chinese racketeers and profiteers also fleeced the Brits by fiddling with the peso-rupee exchange rate, for example, or by forging coins. In December 1763, the new occupiers became so fed up with the Chinese that they ordered the residents of Santa Cruz to pack up their bags and move to the Parian, that ancient ghetto that had existed since the first days of Spanish rule. See? New boss, same as the old boss. To say that all Chinese in the Philippines were traitors during the time of the British occupation is to tell only one side of the story. Just like the native Filipinos, some took the side of the Brits, while others stayed loyal to Spain. Many also took the only side that mattered to them, their own. Upon the Spanish throne, Charles III made his decision. On April 1766, he ordered that all Chinese who had collaborated with the British or committed acts of apostasy against the church should leave the archipelago and never come back. Those who would remain would be put in a registry and banned from bearing arms. Over the next 6 years, Spanish authorities in the colony carried out his orders, resulting in the wide-scale deportation of many Chinese in the Philippines, particularly in Manila. In December 1772, a Spanish official in charge of the expulsions submitted a report to the king. He wrote proudly that only 94 old and sickly Chinese were left in the islands, and then promptly asked for a reward for his efforts. This official was exaggerating, of course. Studying Spanish records, historian Salvador Escoto estimates that around 2,500 Chinese were deported, while an additional 3,000 left of their own volition and 1,000 Chinese died. In total, only around 500 Chinese were left in the islands. Considering that the Chinese numbered around 6,200 before the British arrived, that's a jaw-dropping 91% drop in population. The expulsions had done their work. But from 1772 onwards, the Spanish government slowly did a U-turn on their policies and began quietly encouraging Chinese immigration back to the Philippines. When the new century rolled around, Chinese numbers in the Philippines had stabilized at around 5,000 people. Like we said earlier, the Spanish couldn't live with the Chinese, but they couldn't live without them either. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Colonial Department. This is the last episode of Season 5. We'll be back next month with a new season. In the meantime, head over to our back catalog to listen to our other eps from this season. And as always, find us on Instagram and TikTok for more history, behind the scenes, and non-fiction book recommendations. Leo Mangubat wrote, narrated, and produced this episode. Anya Ong Reyes read quotations from sources. References include 1. Articles by Salvador Escoto on the Chinese expulsions of the 1760s and 1770s. 2. An article by Christy Patricia Flannery on the Chinese involvement in the British invasion of Manila. 3. Dissertations, articles, and books by Joshua Eng Sin Kwe, Edward Wickberg, Guillermo Ruiz Tovel, Andrew Wilson, and Charles McCarthy on the history of the Chinese in the Philippines.